here is what this was published. Was it today? Yes, it was. By David Sanger. That he's a piece of work. He was an Iraq war propagandist. But nonetheless, this is a very interesting piece. Just the way that it's talked about. This is like through the lens of the national security state. As Biden reaches out to Mideast dictators. So this is interesting. His eyes are on China and Russia, looking to make Moscow pay for its Ukraine war and box China out of Mideast tech deals. The U.S. president tries to fall back on old Gulf alliances. So here, the New York Times is literally stating that a huge reason why Biden is there is because he wants to, as you were saying, Amir, he's responding to Russia and China's growing influence in the world. And so, you know, the way that they talk about this is hilarious because it's, as we were both talking, like this is not the same. This is like, if this were 5-10 years ago, the way that Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries that the U.S. has militarized and supported for so many decades, the narrative would be different. But now you have all these words used, like painful encounters with the series of Arab strongmen here in Saudi Arabia this weekend. President Biden kept returning to a single reason for renewing his relationship with American allies who fall on the wrong stride of the struggle he often describes as a battle between quote-unquote democracy and autocracy. We will not walk away and leave a vacuum to be filled by China, Russia, or Iran, Mr. Biden said at a session on Saturday with 9 Arab leaders in a cavernous hotel ballroom in this ancient port on the Red Sea. I mean, it's so wild how even trying to create an image of how atrocious these regimes are tends to just end up being racist. I mean, this is just theatrical racism toward countries that the United States literally props up. Anyway, yeah. And we'll seek to build on this moment with active, principled leadership. So he's framing America's mission as part of a renewed form of superpower competition, and it's revealing for decades. This is great. American presidents largely saw the Middle East as a hotbed of strife and instability, a place the United States needed a presence, largely to keep oil flowing and eliminate terrorist havens. Now, more than 20 years after a group of Saudis left this country to stage terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and strike the Pentagon, Mr. Biden is driven by a new concern that his forced dance with dictators, while distasteful, is the only choice if his larger goal is to contain and outmaneuver China. Forced dance with dictators. This is just unhinged propaganda, first of all. But anyway, I want to get your reaction, Amir, quickly to that. Because for me, what's hilarious, and we can continue with the article as well and try to find interesting bits. But to me, this is just propaganda, like literally saying that the U.S. needed a presence here and then in the region. And then to say that this is a forced stance. Of course, importantly, it is important that they're mentioning Russia and China because and that Biden can't get his mind off of Russia and China because it does show this new strategy and that everything the United States does is to isolate those two countries and to build up to a really dangerous war. But even so, the way that the New York Times is framing this through as a mouthpiece of the Pentagon and the national security state, and then the way that Biden is talking about it, there is just so much propaganda here that can be just completely debunked really easily. And it's all to make the United States look like this victim. It's like a victim.
Yeah.
It's got to go through this like arduous mission to defend democracy by, you know, propping up all these really militarized human rights disasters in this region. And oh yeah, destroying that region as well, like just like completely just obliterating it and killing millions of people. And then, you know, we'll get to that democracy and we'll confront Russia and China. But anyway, I want to get your reaction.
So, I mean, one of the most ridiculous things about this is, you know, acting like the U.S. isn't the reason why the situation is the way that it is in the Middle East. And I was immediately going to the pharmaceutical company. It's like they create a problem so that they can give you medicine for a problem that they've created that gives you more side effects that they have to then give you more medicine. That's basically how I look at the United States military-industrial complex. It's they want to go into these regions, cause instability so that they can say, there's instability in the region. We need to go in and be the peacemakers and figure out how to fix this issue, when all in all, it's some, you know, op that's been done to dismantle a ruler, a tyrant, whatever. But it's this constant like hubris by the United States of acting like they can solve a problem, but they're actually the ones that created the problem in the first place. I mean, and that's why the Middle East is in the tumultuous situation that it is, because of colonialist intervention that happened in the early 1900s, like even before, you know, Israel and needing a Jewish state to protect the Jews from the Holocaust even was a thing, because this was as the Ottoman Empire was declining, and they took advantage of that declining moment to dismantle this entire region and have all this infighting going on in areas that didn't necessarily see that before. And now they use, you know, the religious tensions, the differences between the different sects, to say, oh, this is why this is happening. This is why there's terrorism. This is why there's, you know, Al-Qaeda. This is why they bombed the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and things like that. I could say so much about those things, but yeah. It's just like the U.S. creates these problems and then acts like they're the savior, and they still don't even fix the issue. They just make more issues.
Yep. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just so obvious that the United States is the problem in the region. Mm-hmm. I mean, the United States, you know, since 1979, when it created the Mujahideen or facilitated their growth and then destroyed mm-hmm. Afghanistan, you know, to give the Soviet Union its Vietnam, and then on and on and on, right? Multiple times trying to get rid of Saddam Hussein and overthrow Iraq's government, and then finally doing so in 2003 in the most brutal of manners. And then, of course, we saw what happened in Libya and Syria and on and on and on, just like one catastrophe after another, proliferating terrorism, creating this huge refugee crisis. Mm-hmm. And now the region is more unstable, less united, more impoverished than it's ever been in maybe in its history. I mean, we're talking about the cradle of civilization. Like, this is not a region without a rich history, even in the 20th century, of building a united front to develop along modern lines. Like, this isn't it's often framed in a really racist way in the opposite. Mm-hmm. But, this region has a rich history. And, you know, I wanted to go back to the article because it's a pretty rich one. It gets better, I feel like. So here they talk about, they admit, this is something that's admitted now in Western mainstream corporate press, in the U.S. corporate press, Mr. Biden's effort here to negotiate greater oil production, jarring enough for a president who came to office vowing to help wean the world from fossil fuels, a lot of this feels like a jab at Biden too. There's obviously a crisis of confidence in the Biden administration that you would not have seen 12 mm-hmm. months ago. 6 to 12 months ago, it would have been the Biden apology tour. Now the ship is really rocky. There's a lot of holes on it. It's sinking. And the corporate media, while not really criticizing and condemning in a real productive way, is really taking a lot of jabs at Biden. I find that very interesting. But mm-hmm. this is also more interesting. So it's all driven, they say, by the need to make Russia pay a steep price for invading Ukraine. And here's what they admit. So far, that price has been scant. Not only are the Russians continuing to collect substantial oil and gas revenues, they are even supplying Saudi Arabia, Reuters reported recently, with fuel for its power plants at discounted prices. So they're admitting that the United States is not succeeding in Ukraine at all. Like, they're not succeeding, and they're not even succeeding in pulling key so-called allies like Saudi Arabia into their orbit to make their plans in Ukraine more successful. I mean, it's just, it just couldn't be any more blatant. Anyway, do you have any reactions to that?
Just like the common adage of like, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that's basically what we've done with this, with Russia, China, and even Saudi Arabia. Because just like we were talking about, you know, with Israel, that they're not as good of an ally as people think that they are. Saudi Arabia, too, they will do the same thing. The minute a better deal comes on the table, they're going to take it. And you kind of can't blame them for doing that. Every country is trying to maintain their dominance and their, you know, their larger place on the global scale of power and control and prosperity. And so, I mean, that's essentially what's happening here.
Yeah. And what I find interesting about Saudi Arabia, because as this article will continue to talk about with Russia and China, Saudi Arabia has, I mean, there are reports in Reuters as well that the Saudi regime is saying, look, we are not going to cut ties with Russia and China. We are going to balance between the United States, Russia, and China. We're not going to discriminate. And I think what's so interesting about that is it's really a stark message to the United States that even its most historically, you could say, close relationships in this region, even Israel's like this too, are looking at what is happening to the United States, even with Israel being so connected with the petrodollar and all that. They're looking at the United States and they're saying, that's not a great bet. You know, like that's not a good, like we can't hedge all of our bets on the United States because of its instability and its unreliability. Like, I mean, this is the United States coming to Saudi Arabia and basically saying, do what we say, you know, that, yeah, that eventually will wear upon even the most closest of friends when you are also not necessarily the most stable and legitimate and powerful looking force that maybe you once were. And they talk about here in the New York Times that there was an announcement that they're going to try to cooperate to build. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. There's barely any 5G technology in the United States, but the United States is trying to compete with China and Huawei, which is the main builder mm-hmm. in China of 5G technology, and now 6G coming up. The United States announced an agreement where they're going to try to help Saudi Arabia do that. I find that hilarious because they did that in the G7 too. They said, we're going to spend $600 billion and build infrastructure. And none of these countries, the United States especially, none of these Western countries have built a damn thing since Biden has been in office alone with the whole Build Back Better and the Build Back Better world, nothing. But yet now, no matter what we're talking about, what event we're talking about, the United States, Biden has to do something to kind of pander to this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the New York Times is saying this is all an effort to begin pushing back on Beijing and parts of the world where for years the Chinese government has made progress without feeling much competition. Talk about the NATO summit meeting. Biden celebrated a new strategic concept that for the first time recognized China as a systemic challenge, describing its policies as coercive and its cyber operations around the world as malicious. That wasn't in quotes in this article. So you get the message. The doctrine said that along with Russia, Beijing was trying to subvert the rules-based international order, words similar to those the Biden administration has used on this trip to Israel and Saudi Arabia. Of course, it's similar. Of course. But after that summit, European officials said they would focus on pushing back on China's influence. Okay, so this is all just repeating, repeating, repeating. So the effort here in Jeddah is similar to show that the United States will help push back on Chinese and Russian influence. Mr. Biden outlined a five-part new framework for the Middle East that included supporting economic development, military security, and democratic freedoms. Let me conclude by summing up in one sentence. The United States is invested in building a positive future in the region in partnership with all of you. And the United States is not going anywhere. I love how everything is like, it's a partnership, but we ain't going nowhere. It doesn't matter if you agree or not. We're not going anywhere. It's like everything is a threat. Everything mm-hmm. it's a threat. Even the countries that are like not even saying, hey, we don't want to be around you. Like these countries are literally like, we're trying our best to, you know, serve you and to be around, you know, to get to have a relationship. But in a room full of unelected autocrats and absolute monarchs, he made a point of nudging them on human rights a day after his meeting with Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who, according to the CIA, ordered the 2018 operation that killed Mr. Jamal Khashoggi. Freedom of dissent, he said, would make them stronger, not weaker. So some lecturing there. He made no mention of the fact that looms over the Middle East countries' commercial dealings with Beijing. They know that China's investments come without lectures, much less sanctions for human rights violations. But Mr. Biden tried to make the case that freedom and innovation go hand in hand. So anyway, I mean, that's kind of amazing, honestly, for them to admit again that the United States knows, and the New York Times obviously knows, that China's investments come without lectures, they said, and much less sanctions for human rights violations. And so what's your reaction to this? Because for me, to me, this is just like the empire is naked, and it's telling a very, I don't know, there's something almost like this feels like a children's story. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're writing it like, so like, I feel like I can't help but read it in the way I am, because there's mm-hmm. all of these descriptors, and like, they're trying really hard to make this sound almost childlike. Like there's some kind of like, they're like playing at the park or something, and they're like kicking the ball around, and they're trying to figure out what are the rules of the game. You know, that's what it feels like here.
I agree. It's very infantile in a way. And it's also just very, sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought for a moment. It's very, very telling about, they want to tell a particular story. So like, they want to tell the story that they're telling themselves in their head and have that be disseminated on the New York Times with a very, this is very like fragrant language in a way, trying to make certain things look good. And then the like tiny bits of scolding what the Biden administration is doing, but nothing that Biden is saying is anything of substance. Like, and that seems to kind of be the unfortunate Democratic Party method right now, is it's just a lot of talk that just is circular. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't provide anything of substance, and it doesn't do anything, like, because this isn't going to change anything. This isn't going to do anything of substance to either the region or to the United States. It's not going to bolster ties between these nations. If anything, I think Russia and China and even like Saudi Arabia and these monarchs are seeing how, you know, like kind of like you said, like this like nakedness. It's like the emperor is not wearing any clothes right now. And it's just so very evident with Biden. I don't think that they know how to have him do this in like a functional capacity. So they just kind of give him these kind of blanket statements to make that they don't mean anything, but it's the story in their head that they want us to believe, even though all of the evidence points to the contrary.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And you know, we'll definitely we're gonna finish this article, I think, to conclude our segment together. But I definitely want to just reiterate, you know, that I think part of this circular logic too. And you know, I've usually stay away from this argument because I don't think it's a great one. But I do think that there is an element of part of the what reason why the New York Times is talking about it like this, talking about this issue like this, and it almost sounds like they're communicating with what they, and this could afflict them as well. I'm not, this is definitely, I think, a problem for the messenger as much as it is for those receiving it. Is there is a circular logic that's dumbed down. Like, this feels mm-hmm. very dumbed down. It feels like this is kind of like, here's what the national security say in the Pentagon wants, what they're saying, here's their message, and we're kind of giving it to you in like a children's book form, because we don't really give a crap about what you think. You are not critical of this. This is not for you to be critical of. This is you to digest so you can take it to your think tanks, take it to your whatever, you know, mm-hmm. the other guy, Baker, I forget his first name, he's a Washington Post guy. Sanger's a New York Times. I mean, these guys, they're all part of the same club. And then they're talking to those who participate in the club, who are part of, who are in the membership in the club. You know, it, there is no, this isn't to cater to anyone who's for peace, isn't to cater to the left. It's all just kind of like recycling establishment talking points so that they're informed about, here's the strategy, here's whether it's successful, here's, you know, we know that, you know, Deborah Messing, you guys are kind of like mad at Biden, you don't think he's the most competent. Okay, so let's just do a little dance, you know, here in the New York Times, and give you what feels like the most sanitized yet also very revealing way of communicating what really is just straight up, you know, straight up diktats from and talking points from the foreign policy establishment.